welcome to episode 9 of season 3 of the Live It Well podcast. I'm your host, Richard Dedor. I'm thrilled to be welcoming our 9th and final guest of this season, Mike Paulson, an old friend of mine. I've known him since high school. He played hockey. I played tennis. We had mutual friends. That's how we got to know each other. And through the wonders of Facebook, we've stayed in touch. So we cover a bit of hockey in this episode. We're both fans of the Colorado Avalanche. So we relive a little bit of the glory days of Joe Sakic and Patrick and Ray and Peter Forsberg. And then we cover the reason that I really wanted to talk to Mike. Over the past 6 months, he has decided to tackle something in his life that took a lot of strength and a strong support system, and I wanted to hear his story. I wanted to share his story, and it comes from the heart. And Mike, I love you for sharing your story with us and for sharing your story with the world and doing your best each and every day to live it well. I hope you enjoy this story, everyone. Please listen to the whole thing. Just trust me. Without further ado, my guest for the final episode of season 3 of Live It Well, Mike Paulson. Well, Mike, I'm so glad we finally were able to get this scheduled out. Even with COVID and everyone at home, it seemed like it was hard for us to do this. So glad to have you.
No, my pleasure. Thank you.
So we've known each other. I was trying to do the math, but we've known each other for a long time. We went to high school together. You were, I believe, just a year below me. Yep. And we knew each other just because I was friends with your hockey teammates. And then we got to know each other over the years. So I want to start with hockey. You're a hockey player. What position did you play?
So growing up, I was a forward. Easiest way to describe it to a non-hockey player is the goal scorer. I try to score goals. Defense tries to keep the puck out of the net. So I was on a forward trying to score the goals.
And did you score the goals?
I did my fair share of scoring goals, yeah. wasn't a superstar by any means, but I got a couple good goals in my repertoire that I can still look back on and remember vividly.
What would you say is your most favorite goal that you ever scored, if you have one that you kind of know and remember?
I have one that I can still remember play by play, and when I was playing hockey in college at our national tournament, in our first round, we went to overtime, and we were my line mate. The puck was cleared out of the zone. It ended actually did hit a rafter, but the ref didn't blow it dead. So the play continued, and I was streaking in on the far post, and I knew my line mate was he always would shoot left blocker or left pad on the goalie's pad. So the goalie went down, he shot on the ice, left pad. I was right there for the rebound, tucked her home, and then just the sense of my teammates jumping on me, how it was just one thing that I'll never forget. And just even after getting off the ice, like, holy cow, what happened? This is amazing. Everybody's like, dude, did you guys see it go off the rafters up there? And I'm like, no, I didn't. I was just in focus, but apparently it went off the rafters. And hey, I mean, a goal's a goal. The ref doesn't call it dead. It's game on.
It's game on. That's right. So did you ever win, whether it was high school or your collegiate playing, a championship?
When I was in Bantams, we won. That was a long time ago. So whenever, I mean, I guess I'm wrong. Sorry. In college, we won our league championship.
Okay.
And we were an underdog in that. And I remember I was injured. I was out for the rest of the year with a AC separation. And in that tournament, our goalie even scored a goal. So it was pretty – we kind of ran away with the tournament. It was incredible. And so that was one of the few championships that I won in my life.
And this – I don't actually know the answer to this question. I know your older brother played. Did your younger brother play hockey too?
He did, yep.
And did you guys ever play on the same actual team at the same time?
Not after Meister Squirts.
Okay, okay.
My older brother was 2 or 3 years ahead of me, and then my little brother, same thing, 2 or 3 years below me, and we never intertwined at all.
I always
in college we would have. My little brother and I would have in college, but I graduated basically in the winter, so I chose not to play that whole year.
Yeah.
So he was on that team that I would have been on.
So I obviously didn't play hockey. I was a tennis player. Love hockey. I don't know how I picked it up because no one in my family likes it or played it. But the other thing that you and I have in common is we're both Avs fans. And so I'm curious, I feel like you've gone to some games out in Denver. Who was your favorite? I'll ask two questions. Who did you try, like growing up, who was the player you wanted to be like?
Peter Forsberg.
He was a forward, so it makes sense, but he was really, really good.
He was the, in my opinion, the best power forward the game has ever seen. He had size, he had finesse, he could do it all. He would throw guys off of him if he was in a tight corner. He just dominated the ice.
Yeah.
And he's the one that I started to emulate as I got older.
I hated
the world. And,
obviously, that's easy. I always felt bad when that Peter's career ended kind of the way that it did. Just his ankles just couldn't hold up.
Yeah. It was awful just seeing, because then he bounced around, ended up in Philly for a year or two, and it's like, I always saw him as an Av, and it's nice that they recognize him back as an Avalanche, so.
Obviously, the glory days of the Avs have come and gone.
They're coming back.
The 2001 team that had Joe and Ray and Patrick and Peter and I mean all stars all around was so much fun to watch. Just not the same.
Absolutely,
but
no, it's not. And I think it's not the same. Just because hockey's so different now, you don't have the fighters. I mean, fighting is going away. You still need players. Still need to police themselves. I mean, that's hockey. You can't. In my opinion, it can't go away. Because otherwise, some goon is going to go after the All Star, and all hell's going to break loose. But it's changed so much. I mean, with MacKinnon and Landeskog and Cale Makar, and I mean, the Avs are good.
They are good.
I think we're in a time of glory days for Colorado, especially for at least another 5-6 years.
Yeah, I would not argue that point. It's good to see, obviously. And I will say one last thing about hockey. Hope don't want to bore the audience if you're not into it. I'm so glad that they changed the rule years ago about the 2-line pass. Because that's just made it so much more fun to watch. It's just so much better. Anyway.
I agree.
I'm going to jump to your family a little bit because I've never actually met your wife, but how did you guys meet?
She is actually my college teammate and roommate's little sister. So she came down a couple times, the initial meeting. We were in a tournament, and we had some games up in North Dakota, and she played college softball up there. And she came to one of her games with her boyfriend, and me in college, I just like, hey, your sister's hot. And he screams outside, because that was after the game, he screams outside over the whole entire rink, hey, bleep that, sorry, hey, Paulson thinks you're hot. And I was like, what are you doing? Kind of embarrassed at first. And it goes by and years go on. And she came down a couple of times. We started talking and we had a lot in common. And then one thing after another. We started dating, and then it always comes up of, what was your first impression of me? And she said, I thought you were the biggest weirdo I've ever met in my life. Because, I mean, who in their right mind,
who says that,
besides a college student who is just all hormoned up, is like, hey, your sister's hot. And I don't know. But, I mean, if I didn't have the guts to do that, then I wouldn't be where I'm at today with the wife and three kids. So, I mean, it's
– Exactly.
I'll take the weirdo initial entry. So.
it worked out for you.
It worked out.
So you have three kids. How old are they?
9. One will be 6 next weekend, and then one just turned 4.
How so is that? I only have one, and we're keeping it at one. I'm curious how three of them are.
They always say, like, you can't stop at 2, but then 3's too many. Yeah, I mean, 3's a lot, but it's the chaos that I love. I mean, no day is ever the same. It's, my boys are nuts. One is a singing, dancing, video game playing crazy man. The other one has no fear and jumps off of everything.
Oh God.
Climbs on everything. I've always been told that the girls are easier than boys and boys are easier than girls. I've heard them both ways, but my view is the girl has been very easy. But when it becomes a teenager, it's gonna
flip. It's gonna be different.
Because,
oh yeah.
I can now relate to my boys on a different level when they're teenagers, and the girl, I'm just going to go talk to your mom because I have no idea.
What is happening?
Yeah. But, yeah, the house is crazy. We have a Great Dane, too, and he's just a lap dog, so he's fun. And I mean, I wouldn't have it any other way.
Did you know that the 6th leading cause of death in the United States is Alzheimer's disease? And that 1 in 3 seniors dies with Alzheimer's or other dementia, and it kills more than breast cancer and prostate cancer combined? I know times are tough, but I'm asking for your help. As the chair of the Iowa Board of Directors of the Alzheimer's Association for the next 2 years, I am working harder than ever to raise awareness and to raise funds to rid the world of Alzheimer's and all other dementias. And your money doesn't just go to research. It goes to care and support groups, which are free, by the way. The 24-hour hotline, which is free, by the way. To education and awareness programs in every community across the country. And it does go to research. The Alzheimer's Association is the 3rd leading funder of research and the highest funder of research that is a non-governmental entity in the world, and they're making strides each and every day. So please give it some thought. If you're interested, please click the link in the show notes to donate to our Alzheimer's walk team today. Your money stays in the local communities to impact, to support, and to educate people all across the country about Alzheimer's, the warning signs, and how to get care and support. This is a disease that is quiet, but it's continually taking away lives of people all around us, including my great aunt, my neighbor, and a dear family friend. Again, the link is in the show notes to go and support our walk to end Alzheimer's. And if you just want more information, you can go to alz.org.
I want to jump into a serious topic. And I'm not quite sure how to segue there. But it would have been last fall sometime, so 6, 8, 9 months ago, you had posted on Facebook, and this really caught my attention. First of all, I appreciate super honesty, which maybe that's why it caught my attention, but you basically posted that said, I've come to the realization that I'm an alcoholic. So I'm curious, walk me through, like, when and how you, A, recognized that something was wrong, and B, how did it start?
Sure. I'll start with the latter. So I didn't drink at all in high school, surprisingly enough. And that was just kind of, I don't know why, but getting to college, and I'm still a shy guy, and the first couple months. I'm like, man, I got to get out of my shell. And then I start drinking a little bit. And I realized I opened up. Like, I'm no longer shy.
Yeah.
I'm going. I'm all these things that I'm not when I'm not drinking. So, obviously, in college, it was just party. That's what we did. That's what you do as a college student. And everything we did, we were in charge of the parties in college. We lived at the place where they were at. Everything we did was, it was sports and drinking. And then we get out, I graduate, and it becomes the norm also. It's like, hey, what are we doing tonight? We're going to grill and have some beers. So, okay, grill and have some beers. And over the years, that was the norm. It's like, we go to, on the weekends, we'd go over, there's always a beer. We'd go to, we'd have, I mean, as odd as this sounds, we'd have birthday parties for my kids, and we'd be drinking. And
yeah.
That was just the norm that I lived in. And that my wife would always say, you don't have to drink to have fun. And I truly felt 100% like I did. Like I could not imagine my life not drinking. And years go by, and I don't think anything, I mean, I'm drinking, and obviously my tolerance is building up because I drink a lot. I mean, that's what we do. And we recently, when life stressors get in the way, so job issues or finance issues or whatever it is, it is all solved by drinking. And then I start drinking more. And then to myself, I'm like, man, I'm drinking a lot. And I'm realizing this myself, but the next day, what do? I drink. Like, okay, Mike, try to go a day. And I'm kind of fast forwarding a little bit, but try to go to a day without drinking. Try to go a week. I could never make it more than a day, more than 2 days. And I was like, and I always was able to kind of blame it on a party or we're having people over. And I didn't realize like I was inviting those parties or grill outs or things to happen. I was like, hey, nobody's coming over. Let's invite some people over. I will get some beers and we'll just hang out. Well, on top of that, I'm not just socially drinking. I don't just have a beer. It's 1, 6, 10, it goes. So, and that's on a regular basis. And then when it got really bad, I wasn't able to make it a day, and then my wife would go to bed, and I'd stay down, and sports were on, so I'd be like, I'm just going to watch another game or whatever, and I would have a couple drinks, which a couple is not a couple, when she's going to bed, and then she wouldn't know anything, she wouldn't think anything of it, because I was right as rain the next morning. And then probably a year and a half ago, I started just feeling really weird. I would throw up in the mornings when I'm brushing my teeth, and I would like feel like little pins and needles and feel a little shaky here and there, and you know, what's going on? And like, man, I gotta start working out, or I gotta do this, or I gotta do that. It was never, hey, you should stop drinking. And I went into, I think I went in to get a physical, and they're like, man, your liver enzymes are pretty high. When was the last time you drank? And I was like, I don't know, the other day. And then I filled out the questionnaire, how many times do you drink? How many drinks do you have a week? And obviously, 1 to 2, not a lot. Every other day, 1 drink a week, whatever I could to not
sure.
be upfront and honest about it. And so then I got a retest on my enzymes and they increased. And I was like, what's going on? So we went to a liver specialist and went in there and run a ton of tests. And I'm lying to them about how much I'm drinking. I'm lying to my doctor about how much I'm drinking. I was drinking during my liver biopsy, the tests that are supposed to be saving my life, or at least assessing the problem. And I'm not stopping drinking during any of this. We went on a cruise, my family did, and before we left, the liver doctor said, you can have one drink. And I was like, okay, one drink a day. She's like, no, one drink the entire trip. And that's kind of where it got really bad. I was incoherent most of the cruise. I had fights with my wife that, I mean, we're in the middle of the, wherever we were in, it's supposed to be amazing, great view, but when they say free alcohol or all inclusive, I mean,
yeah,
I didn't take that lightly. I was like, I'm getting my money's worth if I'm paying this, and I'm not just having one drink. It's already paid for. So we get back, a couple weeks later, I lost my job. I was asked to resign, or I was given the option of fired or resign. I already resigned. So then I have nothing to do. I'm sitting at home, and the next 45 days were all a blur, because I was drunk for 45 consecutive days, and my wife had no idea. I was very high functioning. I remember going and talking to my mom, and she's like, are you drinking? Are you drunk? And I was like, no, of course not. And she would call Mandy, and she's like, no, we don't have any alcohol in the house. And it was very, I mean, it wasn't a lie. It wasn't in the house, but it was kind of hidden in plain sight, if you will.
Yeah.
And I could go to bed, and all these things kept on, like, why am I throwing up? Why is this? And one day, out of nowhere, and you asked how I came to the realization, and I didn't. Maybe I did, but it wasn't me that realized it. It was some, if you want to call it God or some, whatever you want to claim it to be. I was texting with my dad, and out of nowhere, I just said, Dad, I need to talk. And I don't know still to this day why, but he said, I'll be right over. And he came over, and that was the first person I told. I said, Dad, I have a drinking problem. And he said, have you told your wife? And I said, no. He said, okay. Well, she'll be home shortly. You're telling her. And if it wasn't for him to be like, you're telling her right now, and if the timeline wouldn't have added up as quickly as it did, I would have found a way out of it. I would have lied another time. And, sorry. And she got home, and she said, okay, what do you want to do? I said, I need treatment. I need help. And I was absolutely afraid for my entire life to be flipped upside down. I thought I was going to lose my wife, my kids, my family, all by admitting that I had a drinking problem. And that night was awful. I was throwing up every hour and shaking and sweating. And what I realized that night was the year and a half that I had those episodes of throwing up and shaking, I was withdrawing. So I was withdrawing from alcohol every night for the last year and a half. And I was blaming it on everything else. Oh, it's my liver. It's this. It's that. It's acid reflux. Whatever it could be, it was never the alcohol. And so the next morning, we drove to ER. I took some tests. Went into detox, and that was, I told my dad and my wife on November 4th, and on Sunday this week, I celebrated 8 months of sobriety.
That's so awesome. That's 8 months, congratulations.
Yeah, from somebody who I thought alcohol needed to be involved in everything, and I couldn't go a day, to having 8 months consecutively is a thought I never thought of, because even when I went into treatment, I told my wife, I remember walking in and I was like, I'm just doing this so I can drink normally. I just want to be able to drink normally. And when I got in there and they're like, hey, we want you to come take a look at this treatment facility and sit in a couple classes and just meet some of the people. And I thought to myself, I'm nothing like these people. I have a job. I have a house. I have a wife. I have kids. I make decent money. I'm not this thing in my head that an alcoholic looks like. And I was so naive, because the second I walked in there and I actually opened up and listened, every person at that table in that place was telling the exact same story that I was, like, verbatim what I went through.
Yeah.
And the disease of alcoholism does not discriminate at all of who you are. I've met many different people from many different walks of life that suffer as I do. And the thing I focus on today. I was sober today. I woke up today. I didn't go to the store. I didn't get alcohol. None of that happened today. So tomorrow is a different day for me. I take it a day at a time now. That's what works for me. And I have never been happier to say that I don't need to drink to have fun.
Well, that's you've left me speechless. I'm someone who likes to talk, and so
if I can expand a little bit too about it, the reason I posted that thing on Facebook and told my story is because of the same vision in my head that I had of an alcoholic. I wanted it to be known. And part of it was selfish for accountability reasons, but mainly it was, I'm a young person who suffers from this. Yeah. And I want it to be out there to be known to maybe whoever, one person, may see that and be like, you know what? Thank you. Thank you for having the courage to post that. And, I'm going through the same thing. I actually did have one or two people reach out and say, I thank you. I am going through the same thing. What do I do? And that to me was like, oh my gosh, me being unselfish and posting it for the reasons of just getting out there and making it aware, like, this disease doesn't discriminate, literally has changed one person's life.
Yeah.
Like, entirely. And it's weird to say that, because I'm not all about, I'm not in it for the praise. And if you're taking it that way, if you're listening and it's like, oh, he's saying that to be praised, I don't want the praise and I don't need it. That's what works for me, is I have to focus on me. I can't help you. I can tell you what I did, and from there, if you want to take it whatever way you want to take it, that's up to you. But I have to do what's best for me on a daily basis. And for me, it was putting it all out there on the table for the world to see, because I don't want a stigma of, oh, you can't drink in front of him, he's an alcoholic. And, oh my gosh, Mike's coming over, we can't have alcohol around. And this, that, and the other. Where I'm at with it is, I don't want my life to interfere with your life. If you're going to drink, you're going to drink. If I'm going to drink, I'm going to drink. And you drinking is not going to control me from drinking. I promise you that.
Yeah.
If there's a way for me to drink, or if a will or want for me to drink, I'm going to drink. And I think it's hard for people to realize that. Like, they have no influence. For me, they have no influence on what I do. And it's been very, I'm not going to say easy, it sucks, but at the same time, like, who knows, if I would have just, that 30-minute window I had to get out of telling my wife, if I'd even be alive. because stage three liver disease, all of these things, I'm like, that didn't stop me from drinking. So why in the hell would anything else?
Right.
And I don't know. It's
so I will say go ahead.
We were sitting in bed the other day, and I had someone reach out to me, and she's like, "Who is it?" I'm like, "It's some ex." And after I get off the call, she's like, I can't believe you." And I was like, "What do you mean?" She's like, "You don't even realize how much of an inspiration you are to people." And I'm like, I'm an alcoholic. How do I inspire somebody? Hey, you've affected so many people's lives by just admitting it. And the people have had the ability to reach out to you and just ask a question or reach out and talk, that helps them. You're inspiring people to get help if they so choose to have it. And I don't think, it's inspiration and an alcoholic kind of really don't go together a whole lot, but for me, it's a selfish program. I got to worry about me before I can worry about we.
Well, yeah, and I think I will say that it takes a strong person to own your truth, whatever that truth is, whether it's alcoholism or depression or mental health issues or whatever the case may be. It takes a strong person to own it and to walk into that fire, right? And so you can leave the inspirational stuff outside, but you just owning it is so that in and of itself is powerful. And so we were talking before we started taping that I've got another podcast, and Steve and I have talked openly about both of our issues with depression, which is something that we'll both deal with off and on for the rest of our life. But we recognize that we are open about it, and we know how to deal with it as it comes up. And that's not anyone else's job but our own, like you said. You having fun doesn't impact – I see it. I think it's great. But that doesn't hurt me. It doesn't help me. It's just I have to choose for me how to handle my own shit. So you're not wrong, and I think it's. But the owning your truth is so powerful, and I just appreciate it because I don't think A, enough people do, and B, I don't think enough men do, and so that's why I appreciate it so much.
Thank you. I try to be humble about my successes of not drinking, because humility and being humble is, part of the help that I need. But
sure,
at the same time, I celebrate the fact that I didn't drink for a month for 8 months. To me, that is a big deal. And some people are like, "Oh my God, he's bragging about it." Well, if you want to be an alcoholic, feel free. And then when you're no longer an alcoholic, or when you're a recovering alcoholic, and if you want to celebrate, I'm not going to be mad at you for doing that.
Right.
I've
yeah. So you, in your recovery, period, which will be the rest of your life, basically. But in this interim period, you left the job and you've been, making yourself better. You got into woodworking, which is something you never did, you said. Tell me, what made, were you just that bored and you just needed to do it? Or was it I've always wanted to do this. I'm going to go do it.
So with all kinds of free time and the idle hands of the devil's playground all at my beck and call, my wife said, "Can you build me a desk? COVID happened. I need a desk. I need somewhere to work." Sure, I can try. I've never been handy. And she's like, "It's fine. I don't care what it looks like." And I'm like, "Okay, that's reassuring, because don't expect a whole lot." And so I built one. She had plans. I measured once, cut twice, or measured twice, cut once, whatever the saying is. But they turned out, and I took pictures of it, and people liked it. It was like, holy cow, can you build me one? And I was like, I mean, sure, this is never something I don't know what I'm doing. Basically, I was like, I'm not good at this, but sure, I'd be happy to help. And from there, it kind of exploded. I have a garage that we can't park in anymore. There's sawdust everywhere. I started doing tables and, I mean, I did baby gates and anything that people have reached out and said, hey, can you help me? Part of my sobriety is saying yes. Sure, of course. If I can help you, of course, yes, is my answer. Even if I have no idea what it is or, like, how in the world am I going to build this, my answer is yes. Because the second I start saying no is the second I am no longer busy and I have more free time. And with more free time comes the ability to drink, and then it spirals. So I have helped a lot of people with a lot of different projects, and it's pretty rewarding just personally of I built that, and somebody's going to sit at their kitchen table and have dinner with their family on the table that I built. And when I think about it like that, holy cow, it's incredible feeling of, for sure, of random people that I have no idea who they are saying, can you help? Yeah, I can help. What can I do for you? And there it is. And I love woodworking now. I think when I'm old and decrepit and 80 years old, I think I'll be at like city fairs with little trinkets for sale and whittling and all kinds. I mean, it's part of my life now, and I love it.
You're going to be the neighborhood whittler, but that's awesome.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I'm going to circle back to your family. Do you want any of them to play hockey, or you just want them to do whatever they want?
We approach our kids as the same way that I was approached. My parents said, do whatever the hell you want, have fun. So we introduce them to everything. If they want to, they started in hockey. They like it, so they're going to continue to play. They play baseball, softball. My daughter loves softball. She plays that. My son will probably be some, I don't know, salsa dancer in his career at some point. So we're exploring like dance classes, and I want them to just be a kid and have fun.
Yeah.
And not have to. Yes, they'll play hockey if they want to. It comes back to your question. They'll play whatever they want to do, and they have our support. I mean, if it's swimming or tennis or golf, or those are all things that I like doing. So, great, let's go do them together. I mean, I'm not losing with whatever they're doing.
That's a perfect way to say it.
Because I think a lot of parents, in my opinion, push their kids into a sport and push them so hard, they're going to fall in love with the sport. And then they're going to resent their parents. And then it's going to shoot any relationship they had down, and it's going to be hell in a handbasket. If I push them, there's a very fine line, though. You got to be able to push them to succeed and then push them out of their comfort zone. But at the same time, you can't force. I mean, pushing and forcing, I guess, is a very thin line to jump over. But you want them to be successful. You want them to face adversity in anything they do, because that's how they learn. That's how they get better. But if they're not having fun at the end of the day, there's absolutely no point in them doing what they're doing.
It's so funny you say that, because I played Little League baseball growing up, much like many little boys in this country. And I had a coach. I was probably 10 or 11, and he took it way too seriously, for all of us. And I only played one more year after that because he ruined the game for me. And so I totally get, like, as long as you're having fun and you're a good sport about it, I'm going to support you 100% for you to keep doing what you want to do.
Yep. It's like they're 8 year old, or sorry, 6 year old kids. They're not going to be superstars. Like,
no.
What's the average percentage of a college athlete going pro? Well, those are college athletes. Now take a random kid at 6 years old. What do you think his percentage is of going pro?
Yeah.
I mean, like, let them just enjoy the game. Let them be kids. Let them.
Yeah.
Sometimes I get a little too stressed out regarding that subject, and because I see videos of kids and, like, parents screaming and fighting with umpires, and it's like, oh my gosh.
Yeah. No, it's a kid. Not gonna happen. Yeah.
I don't.
Well, I end every interview with four fun questions. Do not think hard about these.
Okay.
But what, and I actually might know the answer to the first one, but what would you say your hidden talent is?
Probably woodworking.
I figured you'd say that. It's not so hidden anymore, but it's, I have to say it's amazing. It's good.
And I'm going to, before you ask the other three, I found out that it's in my blood because my great-great-grandpa or great-grandpa was a woodworker by trade. And
that's awesome.
I actually have a table that he made in his shop back home in my basement. So the bloodlines are still in there.
Nice. What is your favorite kind of pizza?
Meat lovers.
What song or artist is your go-to?
The Killers.
Oh, good call. And then what is your favorite word?
Wow. Favorite word. I have no idea. That's a great final question.
Totally fine. It is a harder one. Well, Mike, I'm just so thankful you joined today and told your story. Whether it helps people or not, I think it's important. It's good to hear, and I just appreciate you taking care of you, which in turn allows you to take care of your family.
Thank you. I am humbled that you asked me to be on, honestly. Just allows me another avenue to get my story out there, just like you said, of just taking care of myself, and that's how I get freedom. So.
What else can you say but wow? What an incredible guest. So first of all, Mike, thank you for joining the Live It Well podcast. Thank you for telling your story. And as I said, thank you for telling your truth. I think there's so much power. There's empowerment in owning your truth and being open and honest about that. Not only for yourself, but for the listeners out there. So I hope you A, enjoyed Mike's story, and B, took something from it. I wrote a quote down while we were talking, and I want to just mention it. Of everything that Mike said, the line that stood out the most was, "Dad, I need to talk." You know, for a couple of reasons. One, men asking other men for help is a rarity. And two, Mike recognizing in that moment, in that split second, that he needed some help. You know, it takes a really strong person to say, "I'm not okay," whether that's with alcoholism, mental health, drug addiction, whatever the case may be. It takes a strong person to say, "I need help." So fantastic. So thankful that Mike was able to join the show. And he actually concludes this season. Season 3 of Live It Well is now in the books. And it's been an incredible journey with all these wonderful, wonderful guests from all walks of life. Sports reporters and city council people, and a woman who has MS, and former track stars turned poker stars, turned just track fans, and just the gamut of awesome guests. So I'm so thankful. I hope you took something from each and every one of them. If you have not listened to them all, go back, check them all out. 9 great episodes here in season 9 from, again, people from all walks of life with different viewpoints, but everyone, every one of them has chosen to live their life well, which is the purpose of this show. If you love it, please do give it a review wherever you're listening, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher. Please give us a review. It helps people find us, and it's just nice to know that you're finding value in what this show is about. If you're interested in another podcast while you wait for season 4 to come out, you can check out Fuck Is Our Mantra. I apologize, NSFW. That's my other podcast with my husband, Steve. It's a bi-weekly show as well. It's just us talking, covering a range of different topics. So if you're interested in that, please do go check it out. The link is in the show notes. Again, this is the conclusion of season 3. Season 4 is in the works. It's going to be a bit different. It's just going to be me. With some really short snippets about some thoughts on life and living and quote unquote living it well. So look for that. Please again make sure you are subscribed wherever you want to get your podcasts. Season 5 is also in the works, which will be a retool of this season. New guests. Can't wait to get started on that one either, but needed a bit of a break between all the time and effort it takes to put these ones on based on some stuff that's been going on in life, but season 5 is on the way, I promise. So, season 3, thank you again to all my wonderful guests, and thank you for listening and going on this journey with me. I am your host, Richard Dedor. If you do want to be a guest on season 5, head to my website, richarddedor.com, send me a message, or find me on Instagram and send me a direct message there. In the meantime, be well and live it well. Music for this episode is Ukulele Fun by Raphael Crux. The credit for the music is found in the show notes. And as always, we can be found online at Live It Well Podcast on Instagram, or you can find me, your host, on Instagram at Richard Dedor. We'll talk to you.